Welcome to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. I'm Jody Peterson. This program is an encore presentation that was originally aired on May 16, 2019. Here in Western Colorado, we love our pets. More than 65% of us own at least one dog or cat, not to mention assorted rodents, reptiles, and birds. And most of our communities have animal shelters that take in unwanted or abandoned pets and find them new homes, try to reduce pet overpopulation, and help educate the public about animal care. For current information about animal shelter hours, services, and more, please contact each shelter directly. On June 1st, 2020, I spoke with Kelly Gooden, the director of Second Chance Humane Society in Ridgeway, to find out how animal shelters are faring during the pandemic. I first asked her what trends she's seeing.
We anticipated a sharp increase in relinquishments. We have not yet seen that. Some shelters in the country have, but in our region, we haven't seen that yet. However, you know, as we're looking at going into the economic recovery phase and not knowing what that's going to look like, we're still staying prepared for that increase in relinquishments.
Have adoptions increased during the pandemic?
As far as adoptions, those have definitely increased. There's parts of the country where people are having a hard time even finding adoptable pets right now because there's been so many people who have taken this time to bring pets in need into their families because they had the time to do that. And they're also seeing, and this is one of the other kind of silver linings of the pandemic, is for pets anyways, that people are really recognizing the importance of pets in their lives as emotional support and physical comfort. And you're really seeing that that's something they can provide, especially when we're so isolated. So adoptions have increased due to that as well. And our adoptions have definitely picked up.
What have you been able to do proactively to help pets and people?
One of the things that we also did as we were looking at relinquishments increasing is how we could directly prevent that. And so we've had a pet pantry, which is for free pet food for low-income families and individuals. We were getting people that were calling really emotionally distraught and just feeling like they weren't able to afford caring for their pets anymore. So we were able to find a grant. We became a hub for the Greater Good Organization for this region, and we received 24,000 pounds of pet food and supplies. And it's been fantastic. We've really, I think, made a difference for keeping some of these pets in their homes. We're dispersing it directly to families, 6 different food banks, and 17 different shelters and rescues that we're providing this resource to. In addition to that, we expanded our foster care program so that if there is that increase that we were anticipating a few months ago, we're still be prepared for that. We're looking at the other kind of big financial barrier for families, and that is medical care. And many families with economic challenges and hardships depend, again, greatly on their pets for social and emotional support, but the barriers to veterinary care. And what we've created is low-cost, high-quality veterinary care program. So we did have to put that on hold for a little while during the shutdown just because of the PPE issues and whatnot. We've got that up and running again just within the last few weeks. Spay-neuter also was put on hold during this time, which we're hoping, given it was puppy and kitten season, is not going to have an impact in terms of a pet overpopulation spike this spring. But regardless, those programs are back. A lot of our programs were taking to the West End, Montrose County's West End, Nattarita Nuclear Area, where those the geographic as well as economic barriers are pretty substantial, and offering those directly there.
How has the pandemic affected your organization financially?
That was probably the biggest impact on our organization directly, just because our 2 thrift shops that we operate provide 75% of our income, and we had to shut both of those down. We were finally just last week able to open our thrift shops back up, but at reduced hours and reduced customer on the floor, that sort of thing. So we're still going to be seeing an impact from that.
And what has the effect been on donations?
This is something that's nationwide, not even specific to animal welfare, but a lot of just nonprofit organizations are at this time seeing an uptick on donations from private donors. We're not sure how long that's going to last, but it's really helped.
And you have had to cancel some of your major fundraisers?
Having to cancel events, our 2 major events that are the spring and summer were canceled. So that was kind of an extra ding to our pocketbook because of, having to cancel it after putting a lot of resources into it.
And that was Kelly Gooden of Second Chance Humane Society, talking about how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected animal shelters. The rest of this program was recorded in May 2019. Recently, I visited three Western Slope shelters to find out what they're doing for pets and people. The Animal Interest League and Sanctuary in Delta, known as TAILS, the Montrose Animal Shelter, and Ridgeway's Second Chance Humane Society. These shelters place hundreds of pets a year in new homes, euthanizing only those animals that are ill or dangerous to people. They rely on not only their staff to operate, but also on lots of dedicated volunteers who clean kennels, walk dogs, socialize animals, and more. I first spoke with Joe Masano, the director of TAILS in Delta. This small shelter is privately operated and mostly relies on donations and grants, but it also gets a stipend for serving as a city shelter. Let's talk a little bit about kind of the big picture for Delta County for animals. What kind of issues do you see? What do you see are the major problems?
Delta has always had a humongous cat population, free-roaming feral cats. We hope to work on that, you know, humanely. I think we can put on some programs, get some trap, neuter, and release going. And we do have some wonderful colony caretakers here that have done that for years, you know, on their own dime. And we work really closely with animal control. We have a lot of pets that get out, and we see a lot of the same pets getting out. So we've been working really closely with animal control. Eventually we're leading to a little bit more responsibility with how people house their dogs, you know, fencing and all of that, so they're not getting out and free roaming.
Are there any other big issues that you see with animal caretaking and ownership out here?
We do still get people dumping their dogs like out in the countryside. That is a problem that I would like people to know, that they don't have to dump their dogs. We're pretty reasonable. If we're full, we'll put them on a waiting list if they can just hang on to them for a little while.
Talk a little bit about what it's like kind of being the director of a shelter, and what's it like running a place like this?
It's incredibly fun, and it's incredibly rewarding, and it can also be incredibly sad, but I have a really great team of people.
How do shelter workers and volunteers cope with the stress that goes along with animal rescue and care?
Rescue fatigue is actually a real thing. It's where you just get so maybe even apathetic to rescue that you just, I don't know, you just kind of get devoid of emotion. It can cause depression, it can lead into depression, so they have actual groups that you can go to for rescue fatigue to, you know, talk it out and, you know, get ideas to stay positive. And I try to do that with my staff as well. We have meetings regularly, you know, so I can hear about any issues, we can talk through things, because a lot of many aspects of this job are sad. You know, people coming in, giving up their dog they've had for 10 years, and, you know, they get to go home. We have to be here and see the dog crying for its owner. And, you know, you see that on a daily basis. So people come and they get rid of their cat that they've had for years, and the cat gets depressed. Animals get depressed, you know, and it affects us. It just kind of drains your soul. So we have to find ways to kind of recharge ourselves. With staff here, well, I mean, we're all volunteers. Nobody actually does get paid. So we try and do fun things. We've gone on, like, road trips up to the Mesa and, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, some days we just close early and go take a nap, you know? Just little things. As many little things as we can do just to try and stay positive. And, you know, that's not to say that it's all negative here. There's a lot of positive here, too.
And do you have a favorite story that kind of buoys you up when things get you down?
Just recently, two dogs were found by some campers in Escalante Canyon. They were up on a cliffside in a cave. It's two little chihuahuas, and they were just determined that they were going to be saved. So they yipped at these campers. The campers actually thought that they were coyotes, and they just kept going and kept going until you know, the campers actually came to find him, and they saw them up in the cliffside, and the young man climbed up, got them in a backpack. He rappelled down and brought them into us, and they're just the happiest dogs ever. They've since been adopted.
And that was Joe Masano, the director of the Tails Animal Shelter in Delta. If you're just tuning in, this is Local Motion on KVNF, and this encore show was originally aired on May 16th, 2019. Next, I went to the Montrose Animal Shelter, which, unlike Tails, is part of the City Police Department and is mostly funded by the city. It also gets some donations and grants. The Montrose Shelter takes in about 1,000 animals each year. I spoke with Director Mike Duncan and Shelter Manager Carrie Kishiyama. I understand there are some changes in law coming for the city of Montrose that will affect animal welfare.
We were recently able to update our city ordinances for related to animals, and those are going before our city council in the near future to be reviewed and presented to the public, to our citizens. And then once that process takes place, those revised ordinances will go in place, and that should really help us out in several areas.
What are some of the kind of the changes that are being made in the ordinances?
Our dangerous dog ordinance has been revised a bit to make it a little tighter, so that anyone that has an animal that demonstrates any kind of, a dog specifically, that demonstrates any type of aggression will be able to impound. So it doesn't necessarily have to bite someone or attack someone. If we determine that it's an aggressive animal, we can prevent all that from happening and go ahead and take the animal in. Another change we're proposing is the licensing, to require that people have an identification on their dogs that will help us as animal control officers return the animal to their owner rather than have to bring it out to our already crowded shelter and charge them for an impound fee.
Next, we'll hear from Carrie Kishiyama, Montrose Shelter Manager. And I'm Jody Peterson, and you're listening to the Local Motion program on KVNF.
And so what are some of the big issues that you see in running the shelter? You know, what are your big challenges in managing shelter operations day to day?
One of our biggest challenges currently, and I think it's a trend across most of the state, is the need for really highly adoptable dogs. You know, our spay-neuter programs have worked very well, and so we don't see a lot of puppies. And the dogs that are coming into the shelters sometimes tend to have more behavior issues, and so we're trying to work through those and get them adopted.
It sounds like you have a very effective spay and neuter program. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Since 2005, we've spayed and neutered hundreds of animals, either low to no cost. It's been a huge success in the community. We get told, you know, every clinic how much people appreciate it and how much it's helped them out. That is rewarding.
And Mike Duncan, as director of the Montrose Animal Shelter, what do you wish more people realized about animal shelters? And what are some of the big issues that you face?
One thing people take for granted about animals and animal care is that oftentimes they don't realize that it is a 24/7 job. You can't just put them all on pause and everybody go home for the weekend. All these animals that you see in this shelter obviously have to have food, water, medical care 24/7. Another challenging factor is that we end up dealing with most of the same customers that our police officers deal with. If they're irresponsible in one area, they're irresponsible in just about every area, including animal care.
Do you have a favorite success story to share with us?
There was a gentleman that was raising a litter of dogs in a very small cage and was not caring for them properly. And the officers could have cited him for cruelty and taken the pets, but instead they educated him on the proper care of the pets, and I believe they were even able to get some donations to help out to provide him with some better resources as far as vet care and food and so forth goes. And they improved the quality of those pets' lives. They were able to educate the owner to where he knew how to properly care for animals after that. And at the end of all of it, we were able to take those puppies into the animal shelter and find homes for them. And they were well socialized due to the officer's training of the owner of the pet. So it's one of our success stories.
What are some of the partner organizations that you work with?
A lot of our funding recently, and well, not even just recently, but over the years, has come from Montrose Animal Protection Agency. They use our statistics to apply for grants. And then in turn, the grants that they receive, they manage to spread out to all the veterinarians in the county. And those funds are used to offset the cost of spay and neuter of pets in our county. And those are funded by Animal Assistance Foundation and Telluride Animal Foundation. And then this year, Carrie worked with our grant department, and we were able to get a Colorado Pet Overpopulation Fund grant for $15,000 to help also with the cost of spay and neuter of pets. And we've had two real significant donations from private individuals to our shelter, and so that tells us that they must have some confidence in how we're managing things around here and in the community. One other thing I think it's important to mention is that we are part of a coalition in the Western Slope that consists of 14 counties. It's called We Care. Western Colorado Animal Resources is what that stands for. And anyway, this has really been a beneficial network for everybody involved. Sometimes we'll trade animals with them, and just those that exposure to different markets will move those animals out of our facilities. And we also, as I said, share resources. So for instance, if someone needs to develop some new policy or some new ordinances or justify something such as staff salaries, or maybe they need some type of new equipment, and they can look to the other agencies and save reinventing the wheel, because oftentimes another agency will have already gone through that process.
And that was Mike Duncan, who oversees the Montrose Animal Shelter. I'm Jody Peterson, and you're tuned in to Local Motion on KVNF. If you're just tuning in, this is Local Motion on KVNF, and this encore show was originally aired on May 16th, 2019. On my last stop of the tour of animal shelters, I talked to Kelly Gooden, director of Second Chance Humane Society, which is based in Ridgeway and primarily serves Ouray County as well as San Miguel and Montrose counties. Second Chance celebrates its 25th anniversary this year and takes in about 400 animals each year.
We are the impound for Ouray County, and there's not, and that's something that we've been working towards really for quite a while. There is no animal control actual services. It falls under the jurisdiction of law enforcement, and so we partner with them to serve as the impound for strays.
Can you talk a little bit more about how does Second Chance operate?
Well, in the beginning, we were all volunteer run, but over the 25-year course, that wasn't a workable situation, basically, but we have a really strong volunteer base. We operate three businesses with the shelter and the two thrift shops. Our staffing is usually in the high 40s. It definitely takes a village to do what we're doing.
How do you handle animals that are brought in when they first arrive? I know you do a lot of different things to reduce their stress level, like housing the cats in a room without cages.
Right in the beginning, when the pets come in, doing as everything we can possible to reduce anxiety and fear, and you know, for the cats, it means a lot of tuna and just letting them have time to really settle in and keeping the stress levels as low as possible. Same with the dogs, letting them have some outdoor time before bringing them into the dog kennels, and then look specifically what an animal might need, whether it's socialization, behavioral training, medical, and really targeting that for that individual pet so that they are a lot more quickly adoptable. A lot of the dogs particularly will leave here better behaved than when they entered. They get walked twice a day. We have a good volunteer crew that comes in and does the socializing with cats and dogs. So really all along, though, from the beginning of the organization's history, we've always kind of married our intervention with prevention, that whole analogy of, you know, being upriver, keeping pets and people from falling in is a lot easier than being downriver pulling them out, and a lot of them float by without being noticed. So that's been our approach. So we've always focused on spay-neuter programming, humane education, promoting the human-animal bond.
How has your organization's focus and the way you work with other groups changed over time? Oh, and for listeners, the kind of rattling sound you'll hear in the background sometimes is actually made by a large orange cat who is pawing at a glass door.
So one of the things we've done is just broadened our reach in terms of creating partnerships further out, and we have a really strong partnership with National Puppy Mill. We've been working with them at least a year now, and it's been very successful. And I think the way that we've focused on developing our protocols so that pets stay low stress, and so that they're a lot more adoptable, applying those same things to harder to adopt pets has been really effective. So even though it certainly takes longer to get the puppy mill dogs ready for adoption, we've been able to do it with all of them, and they're succeeding in their homes, and they're staying in their homes. And so that's one area that we've changed our focus, is connecting with partnerships where we can take in dogs and cats that are harder to adopt and still be successful with them. And then just broadening our partnerships into really the Four Corners region, bringing in res dogs from down in northern New Mexico area, and partnerships with Cortez and Durango, Aztec, those areas. So that's another way that we've expanded and shifted focus so that we can continue to rescue as many pets as possible. But the other thing we've done is shifted our programming as well, and shifted more resources into that, so that really we can have a broader impact in terms of continuing to reduce, particularly locally, those numbers of stray pets and just overpopulation in general. So we've really pushed the part of our mission statement that is about promoting the human-animal bond. And we feel that the more people are connected to their animals, the more responsible they'll be in terms of getting them spay-neutered, keeping them healthy, keeping them vaccinated, and with training too. So we now offer low-cost training programs, and that's for cats and dogs really, where if people are having issues, they'll call in and talk about what issues they're having and offer them to come in for training. We have 6-week courses, we have a variety of courses, and so that's been really effective in terms of reducing relinquishments in the region and having a deeper connection with their dog. And they're seeing that a lot of times the issues are things that they're doing themselves versus what the pets are doing, and the pets are just responding to these things. So it's really looking at creating support for people keeping their pets with them for life. One of the things that we're doing in addition to the training is really promoting the human-animal bond. So developing programs that help people to recognize how important pets are to our lives and to our families and to our community, and how much they give to us versus, that we give to them, and that it's that whole question of who rescued who in terms of, when you bring a pet home and what you get from that connection.
The Second Chance Animal Shelter is located near a pretty affluent community, Ridgeway, but I understand you've been trying to reach underserved residents as well.
We feel like we're not quite reaching the populations that we need to be reaching. For example, we just got in a little poodle that was so mad that he could barely walk, and no teeth, and probably had some kind of a, broken jaw at one point. Somebody picked it up on the highway, and we always post when we get strays in, and there was a lot of response in terms of, if the owners do come forward, they should not get this dog back because of how poorly it was treated. And it's really hard to not respond in that way, and to respond, through anger, and that this is very inhumane, and it really is. However, we don't know the situation of whether it had, been gotten away and hadn't been able to have been found, or whether it was a situation where the owners just didn't have the resources. They didn't have funding for a vet. And so that's that's where we're really looking, and how is it that we're impacting underserved communities, underserved families, and that folks who have low income, typically, you know, they're going to love their pets the same as affluent people, but there's barriers to that that then can look as though they don't care for their pets because they don't have the resources that they need. And so how do we keep pets healthy and in their homes and with families that have the barriers to that? And so we're looking hard at doing needs assessment, particularly in like Western Montrose County, where there's definitely a lot of underserved families, and you know, vet access is very limited. So looking in those areas, doing needs assessment, and really taking a strong look at providing a community medical program where it is affordable and where folks who have, you know, a poodle like this can get services and maintain the connections that they have to their pets. And a lot of times the underserved families, you know, they lose their jobs, there's housing challenges, and it doesn't mean that they don't want to provide, you know, this care to their pets. They just have the barriers. And so it's really for us looking at all of the ones that exist and the ones that we can, you know, that we can change or alter. Medical probably being the primary one in terms of being able to provide community medical clinics as we do our spay-neuter clinics, low-income, low-cost clinics. So that's something we're kind of excited about exploring.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing this kind of work?
Well, with Second Chance, next month will be my 14-year anniversary.
It's got to be a lot of joy and a lot of heartbreak, too. I mean, how do you deal with all that?
Well, it's, you know, definitely my heart's work and passion. I was a social worker prior to this, and I actually was just taking a year off, but I'd been involved in a lot of animal rescue as a social worker. And I learned back then that it's, you know, looking at, you know, success in increments. And so that really keeps us going. You know, the next day we're going to have a situation that can just, you know, bring you down. But just focusing on, you know, the end result and knowing that these pets, like, have such an impact on people, and hearing those stories of how people have been impacted, are just seeing how great the need is and seeing the success stories.
When I arrived today, I was greeted by a smallish, light tan dog named Angel with a cast on her front paw and a missing hind leg. What's her story?
So the folks that brought her in thought that she'd been hit by a car because she wasn't able to walk. And so we quickly got her into the vet for x-rays and pain management, and they did discover she'd been shot in the rear leg and her knee was shattered. And because it had been several weeks where somehow she'd survived with these injuries. But it had, you know, the time frame, the leg was not able to be saved. So they unfortunately had to amputate that leg. And then she had another shot in her front paw on the left side, which we're hoping to save that. So
Resilience?
Resilience, thank you, of animals is another just heart-opening and inspiring thing that, you know, again, makes us, like, recognize the importance of pets and what they teach us and the forgiveness that she's so loving and gentle with people after what she's been through is just an amazing lesson. And she just really has touched a lot of people in terms of, you know, how could this happen to dogs? How does this happen to dogs? And our message still isn't loud enough. And that's really energized where we are right now in terms of changing that message and how we deliver that message and how we can get out more and make that message known. She's really helping us to look at, you know, how can we change that message so this doesn't happen. And we've seen, I get to look at her and be like, how can we prevent this from happening in the future? To really allow people to see, you know, pets are important to us as individuals, as families, communities, and really to the world. Without animals in general, like, what would the world look like?
After I finished speaking with Kelly Gooden, director of Second Chance Humane Society, we toured the various buildings housing dogs and cats. As we walked back to my car, a family drove out past us with a small blonde dog in their car and two very excited kids in the back. They stopped to chat.
So is this a dog that you just adopted here?
Yes, this is... Her name here is Juliet, but our 7-year-old daughter might rename her. We're not sure.
I'm glad I got a new dog.
That's Calvin. He's five.
Yeah. And that was Local Motion on KVNF, and I'm Jody Peterson. This encore show was originally aired on May 16th, 2019. Thanks for tuning in.